Lunch Talk with Anton Kannemeyer at BAB. And first of all, the talk will be recorded and published as a podcast in our website, on our website. Yes, Anton Kannemeyer is here as guest for our exhibition project. We had the vernissage last Friday, and on Saturday we had the workshop. And you have all been here in the exhibition, and that's why you know that he was born in 1967, studied fine arts at the University of Stellenbosch, and it's very important because he is the co-publisher with Conrad Boots of the series Bitter Comics, and he brought to us a few lithographs that are exhibited in the exhibition, and his latest publication, Pup in Doubt, compilation of comics and artwork of him.
Good. Well, once again, thank you very much for inviting me and for letting me talk here. I made a bit of a different presentation to the one that I did on Saturday, so that I don't bore the people who have seen the other one. And I also understand a bit better now what this institution is doing, and therefore I try to include a few more things to kind of give a broader background to Bitter Comics and how we started off firstly. Unfortunately, I don't have as many images as I would have liked to have to show something that would be a bit more comprehensive, but I'll work with what I have here and we can have a look and discuss what I'm doing. But if when I'm talking you find something interesting or you would like me to stop, please feel free to interrupt me and we can take it from there. So what I'm showing here is Tessa. It's a photo comic from the early 70s in South Africa. And just to say that photo comics was very popular in South Africa starting off in the 60s. I think it started as early as the 50s, but in the 60s it really gained momentum, and the 70s it was extremely popular. Television came to South Africa in 1976, and after that I think photo comics started going down, and by the mid-80s the photo comics really, this kind of story wasn't published anymore. This is, you can see, published by the Republikeinse Pers. RP stands for Republikeinse Pers. And then these stories were very popular for guys who went to the army, mostly white guys that were conscripted. So they would read especially things like Tessa, which at the time, because of censorship in South Africa, of course, you know, the pornography and so was at all not available. I mean, the first pornography in South Africa maybe started in 94, maybe 93. There were some books or magazines where they maybe showed a woman, but there would always be stars on her nipples, that sort of thing. So it was that kind of censorship. But these books were quite famous as being puss bookies. Well, they were called puss bookies at the time. I was just discussing this with Dag just before. But anyway, there were many different kinds of stories. These were quite exploitative, I suppose, in the way there were some love stories, and then there were one that we referred to a lot in Bitter Comics was Grensvechter, which was about a guy who went up to the border and fought in the Caprivi section of Namibia and also in Angola. So there were lots of Cubans and bad Soviet guys and always a girl that fell in love with him and that sort of thing. So, and then they also made black comics for the black market, which were often edited by black editors. But we tried to find subversive elements in these comics, and we didn't really find that. It really was mainstream, although some of these comics, every now and again, one would get banned because they did something in it that the censorship at the time would find problematic. So this, you obviously know Zapiro. I'm just showing this as an example, and this is an example of Madam and Eve. And in the 1980s, there was an underground comic magazine that originated from Durban called PAX. Now, I unfortunately don't have a cover image to show you. They only made six comics, six issues, and they were very influenced by the American and British underground. I think it started about 1985, around about there, and it stopped about 1990. It was run by an editor called Andy Mason. He continued to make comics subsequently, but not commercial, very much from an underground perspective. Now, the reason why I mention PAX is because both Rico and Zapiro first published their comics in PAX. So it's in that sense, I think it's quite a significant magazine. Although the numbers of PAX, PAX stands for Pre-Azanian Comics, P-A-X, it was a very limited run magazine, maybe, I don't know, 300, that was kind of their print run. So they are very hard to find. I think I have one copy, my brother maybe have two or three copies. Obviously, Andy Mason still has the full set, and I'm in contact with him. But they are very rare now to find. So this is a photograph of myself on the left-hand side and Conrad Wirtis in our second year. You can see I had more hair then. And we met as students in 1988. And 1989 was the first year that we drew a comic together. And this comic was called Case 308, and it was about conscription. Our initial impulse to draw comics was really that we wanted to draw adventure comics and that sort of thing, but the moment we started, it immediately became something that was more political or socio-political in nature. In 1989, we first published in this magazine. It's called Stet. It was on the left-hand side, you can see it says October 1982, and that was the first issue of Stet. Stet is a term that printers use, and in Afrikaans, I don't know if it's just Afrikaans, it could be something that works in other languages as well. It means leave it as it is. So don't change, leave it as it is. State it would mean, you know, leave as is. This magazine was the first magazine that I, as a child, I was in high school during the time, found extremely stimulating, and was a magazine that really started using foul language, foul Afrikaans language, and used it in such a way that for the first time, I thought, well, you know, there is something that is actually cool in Afrikaans. Not everything in Afrikaans is negative, bad. And you can see the number two here. They have a photograph of Breiten Breitenbach. But at the time, you were not allowed. He was in jail still at the time. And you were not allowed to show the eyes of somebody who was in jail if you had a picture of them. So that's why his head was cut off right beneath the eyes. He also, when he came out of jail, I think it was in, it was soon after, it was maybe 84, he immediately published with the publishers Taurus, who used Stet as an Afrikaans direct translation would be a mouthpiece. It was a magazine that the publisher brought out. So this Stet, this magazine also published, I mentioned to Doug earlier, a Namibian artist, a white Namibian artist. His surname is Nolde, if I remember correctly, and I remember that was the first time I saw comics in Stet, and that was drawn by him. And then subsequently we then also got published in Stet. So this was the first time we were published. Stet is also a very rare magazine to find. They printed a print run of 600, so it was very limited. And it was something that kind of went under the radar. I mean, they had very, very provocative stories in there. And some of the contributors to Stet wrote under pseudonyms so that they won't be recognized by the police or so subsequently. So you'll find, if you read through it, you'll find some obvious names that you will know, but you'll also find names here that are... I know there's a woman, for instance, Karin Concentrasiekamp, she made the drawings, you know, and you wouldn't know who she was. And then Dan Ruud, he's an author, a South African author who published here, and he actually, the state made a case against him for making a book that they regarded as pornography. And I remember there was quite a thing that it had to it had to be proved in court that it was actually literature and not just pornography. Anyway, so from that kind of background, Bitter Comics started. This is the cover of Bitter Comics number one. As you can see, we didn't use color at the time. Also, Conrad and I, when we started the magazine, we basically have drawn up to that point, and this was 1992. We've drawn many different short comics, which we then put together in this magazine. It has 60 pages. The cover was done right at the last moment, I think a few hours before we had to go to the printers. So we did it during the week. We worked right through the night, and did the, which is a mistake. Subsequently, we realized it's very important to have a good cover and not just something that you do right at the last minute. And you can see that the letters in the word Bitter Comics has kind of a feel of as if it has Russian characters in it. And obviously that kind of thing was something that we deliberately put in to make it look like an underground thing, something that the police force and so would find upsetting. Here we are, we've been communists or whatever. the first magazine was met with kind of indifference, as this kind of thing is met with normally. I mean, for me it was a life and death situation. I thought, let me please not die before this magazine is in a bookshop at least. we realized very quickly that we are not going to make an impact with a magazine like this. So what we did was immediately to start printing some of the pages, large silk screens, so that we can sell the comic within a context of an exhibition, maybe also to give it kind of more of a high culture impact. So we sold it for very little, for R5 a piece, and people bought it. Many people didn't want to buy it. They thought R5 was too much. this is normally the case. But in the end, we did manage to sell all of them, and so make enough money to actually print the second one. So, and the money that we got for the printing of it was, both Conor and I got a bursary for postgraduate study, and we just took that bursary money and printed the comic with it. We also basically put the comic in the back of our car and went to several bookshops and just stopped everywhere and asked them to take as many as possible on consignment, so they didn't have to pay us and we would later collect the money. We also drove it up to Johannesburg and did the same there. When we got to Durban, we would do the same there. Even in Bloemfontein, we tried to distribute the comic. So it was obviously always difficult to also get the money back, because you had to literally stand in front of the people before they'll pay you. but we managed to do that. Then we would also take the comic to cultural festivals, and kind of walk with a comic in the backpack and try to sell it to people from there. We had a few reactions in the press on the first comic, but not much. People saying, it's kind of nice alternative thing. You also have to understand the kind of cultural climate at the time, 1992. There were some alternative Afrikaans bands playing, and that did create a bit of a hype. After making this comic, Conrad and I were invited to make some posters for some of these bands. So we also did for some alternative plays that were running, all Afrikaans at the time. So the thing is, we all of a sudden found ourselves culturally embedded in the kind of left-wing anti-apartheid kind of group. So that's where we immediately were situated. But the comic wasn't too confrontational. I mean, I did have some lecturers saying to me, listen, you have to be very careful with this comic that you've made. The military police may start looking at you and that sort of thing. But I also feel that Bitter Comics started right at the end when apartheid was starting to come to an end. I mean, by 1992, a lot of petty apartheid was already starting to be taken down and ruled out. With petty apartheid, I mean things like signs saying whites only and that sort of thing. You had benches saying blacks may sit on this bench, whites may sit on that bench. That's the kind of thing that was removed at the time. So here is Bitter Comics number 2 and number 3. We dropped in one color. At the time, it obviously wasn't digital, so We would draw the cover and then cut pieces of film and whatever and paste everything on, and then you create your color on a second plate, and that would get printed like that. These comics, up to number four, no, actually up to number six, we actually stapled ourselves, and we would just ask the printer, we would want printing costs to be as low as possible, so that we would have these stacks of paper that we would put on a trolley, take back to the art department, and then we would sit there throughout the night, get friends, buy beer, and everybody would sit and staple throughout the night until morning. And we had these presses in which we would put the comics to press them. So it was pretty much very much hard work, you know, first drawing the comics, then putting them together, making them really, and then distributing them. It was, we slept very little, but we didn't, you know, that wasn't the problem.